This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, a three times weekly show looking into the exciting happenings of Ipswich Town Football Club. This is the flagship show. My name is Mikey Penty-Smith. And on the weekend, the Ipswich dropped down into the third tier of English football for the first time since 1957. I'm joined by two Premier League podcasters. It's Dave Diamond and Joe Fares. How are we, gents?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, pretty good, Mikey. Thanks.
And Tiger Woods has just won the Masters, and incredible. Joe Fares has just revealed, and we're going to have to do this at the top of the show, he's a mate of yours.
Yeah, a guy that I had breakfast with, I can't remember when it was, it's probably about 10, 12 years ago, at the K Club. We'd been out there for the European Open where my mate's dad was a member, and in the morning after the Open, he flew in with Marco Mira, sat down, had breakfast, and would have gone fishing with him that day, but my mate's dad had to get back for work, so my chance to go fishing with the big dog never happened.
That's a great story. Yeah. That's a great story.
It just about trumps your Will Keane breakfast at Milsom's, doesn't it, Dave?
Yeah, no, I had lunch with Ian Botham last week. But
oh!
Yeah, but no, I'll take that back. I won't. It wasn't quite like that. I attended a lunch with Ian Botham last week. But no, it's nowhere near breakfast actually with Tiger, nowhere near that, but he was on pretty good form, me and both of them.
Now, I was distracted by the Tiger Woods story. I was, when I lined up the first relegation to the third tier since 1957, I was going to ask you straight off the bat, Dave, does this one hurt more than the one in 1957?
Loads more. Yeah, right.
Yeah, we kind of have to laugh, don't we? Otherwise, we'll cry. Because this, let's be honest, this is the podcast we probably thought we'd never have to do. And we certainly didn't want to do it. But here we are. So, yeah, this is the part of the show where we normally do the news, but due to the nature of what's happened, we should probably just move on to Saturday as quickly as possible. But we did have a game on Wednesday. I know Ben covered it on the podcast with Harry and Rich on Thursday or Friday. But just a quick line from both of you on that one, a 2-0 defeat. An expected disappointment, that one, Joe?
Yeah, beaten by a better team, in all fairness, on the night, and a much better team in reality, the way they move the ball around. But goals change games, and if Quainer puts that chance away at 0-0, then it's a totally different game if that goes in, because Brentford are not in good form. They're flaky at the back and they give away chances, but you've got to take them against them because they will score.
Yeah, they do play lovely football. I said 2 weeks ago when I was on the pod with you, Dave, that Alan Judge would definitely score at Brentford, and he should have done, shouldn't he?
Oh, should have done. Yeah, I mean, I think that showed his, perhaps, I don't know, but he hadn't scored for how many games he's played for. It was perhaps a bit of lack of confidence. Probably could have taken it on another couple of strides and made sure, you know, but snatched at it, didn't he, really? That was a big chance. I know we were 2-0 down, but there's your way back into the game. And again, first goal, I thought, their first goal was a microcosm of our season. You know, we should be 1-0 up. Ball goes the other end, fairly crap defending. We're 1-0 down and chasing the game. That summed it up for me.
It was,
in a nutshell, really.
Yeah. just perfectly wrapped it up, didn't it?
Yeah.
We just about survived on Wednesday night because results didn't go completely against us.
Yeah, for a time it looked pretty dicey, didn't it? I think Millwall were, it did look pretty iffy for a time, but yeah, we did extend it for a few days.
Mm. But that defeat did mean that we went into the game against Birmingham knowing that unless we picked up a fifth league win of the season, we'd be relegated. How did you both feel going to the game on Saturday? Starting with you, Joe. Was it more of a feeling of dread than usual? Or
Not really. I was expecting to go down that day. I think, however the results went, I thought we were going to go down. I hadn't really looked at the combinations and didn't realise that Wigan were playing today and things. And I was hoping that we'd win yesterday but still go down anyway to get it over and done with. But I don't think that actually could have happened. So I was just, I don't know, I was happy to get it over and done with, really. But then when it, I'm sure we'll come on to this, but when the actual game ended and the reality of it happened, that was sort of a much more difficult moment than I thought it would be. But okay. We'll come on to that.
Yeah. So let's just go straight into it then, and we'll talk about the team. We played a sort of a 4-3-3 of sorts. Barton goal. Josh Emmanuel came back in at right back, as he seems to be doing most of the home games. James Collins came back in for Nsiala. Chambers and Kenlock, the ever-presence at the moment of the back four. Cole Skews returned in the middle with Bishop and Dizel either side of him. And then we had Gwan Edwards on the right, Judge sort of an outside left, and Colin Kwana through the middle. Pleased to see we only had one loanee in the team, Dave?
I think so, yeah. I couldn't quite understand Collins for Nsiala, I must admit. But yeah, I think that was a good sign. And nice to see, you know, Emmanuel back at right back, although I thought Bree was half decent against Brentford, but obviously he's not our player. So yeah, overall, yeah, I think that was a positive thing. But yeah, I couldn't really understand Collins coming back. And yeah, sure enough, he lasts, what, half an hour? Was it half an hour?
It was an hour.
It was second half. Yeah. He's kicking. Yeah, you're right, yeah. He was kicking.
Yeah, I sort of felt like he seems to be pairing some of the experienced players with the inexperienced ones. So when Emmanuel comes in, he wanted to bring Collins in rather than having Nsiala in there. But I mean,
I can see where you're coming from. I didn't get a point really, but I don't think we'll see Collins again probably.
I always wonder where they go for an hour. Was it a pre-planned substitution? Because it didn't look to be in any great distress in the minutes leading up to going off. And
no, he did walk off fairly slowly,
Say he did walk off gingerly, didn't he? But then he always does. Anyway, I thought perhaps he had something was up with him. But you might be right in hindsight. Yeah, it was an hour, so you might be right, Joe. It may have been pre-planned, but an unusual one for centre half to be sort of pre-planned, isn't it?
And in a first team game as well. It's normally a
that's a bit odd, like Emir Hughes 12th comeback. Yeah.
I'll quickly run through the Birmingham team as well. They had Camp in goal. They play a 4-4-2. Camp in goal, Pedersen left back, Morrison and Harley Dean the centre backs, Colin at right back, Jota, or is it Hotter, right wing, Gardner and Davis in the middle. Rabti. I'm not sure. How do you pronounce the left winger? I'm going to look at you, Joe.
No idea.
Emrabati.
No idea. I'd never heard of him.
Nor do I.
To ask Harry and Rich.
Yeah. Never heard of him.
And then the front two of Che Adams and Lukas Jukovic, who, as we'll get onto, absolutely ripped us to shreds in the first few minutes of the game, didn't they?
Yep.
There was a reasonably good atmosphere at the start of the game. How long did it take? Was it 3 minutes? I mean, you were just hoping that, yeah, we are probably going to go down, but let's go down fighting. I think that was the attitude of all the home fans going into Portman Road. And then, 7 minutes. Joe, can you talk us through what happened?
I'm not. Was it Jota out on the right? Was it? And he just is up against
Kenlock.
Colin. And he just beats Kenlock far too easily, doesn't he?
That's a disappointing thing. He just out-muscles him.
Yeah, he sort of nutmegged him and then muscled him. So Kenlock kind of got done twice.
Yeah, and he sort of got done really easily and didn't... It knocked him so much that he couldn't even get back to put any pressure on him once he was past him. He was totally gone. He put the cross in. I think it deflects off James Collins, and then Djukovic is there and just smashes it into the top of the goal. And 1-0 down after 3 or 4 minutes, and it's looking like a long afternoon, especially after the previous game against Hull at home, where we'd been really poor.
We've got a few Twitter questions on the formation and maybe where Judge has played, but it can't be a coincidence that when Judge is out there and wide left, the opposition right back seems to have a great time flying forward, doesn't he, Dave?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't think Chambers covered himself too much with that goal. Again, if you look back, he's sort of, I think, guilty of ball watching a bit, and Djukovic, I know he's ever so close in, you know, but Djukovic sort of runs off him, and he's, yeah, he don't know where he is, but yeah, simple goal, wasn't it, really? I couldn't believe it. It was like Djukovic's, was it his like his second goal in the last 25 games or something ridiculous. I mean, he must have started the season on fire.
I've always thought he's more of a like facilitator for another striker.
Well, we were in for him, weren't we? But supposedly, weren't we, Joe? I think we were in for him.
When Murphy left, was it?
I think so.
And then he went to Birmingham on loan, and then subsequently into a permanent deal.
Yeah.
And Djukovic, who we're talking about now, he very nearly got on the end of a sort of cross shot from Che Adams early on. And at this point, the atmosphere was flat, and it was looking like we're going down with a whimper.
And maybe their front two, you're right, we're a handful, real physical handful as well.
Yeah, Che Adams is a good player, isn't he? He'll get a premiership movie. So it reminds me a bit of Troy Deeney, where he can just get around and just knocks people over, and he's just so strong in that upper half.
Yeah, I liked him. I really did. We said that people yesterday, you know, you can imagine him going to like a Brighton or a Burnley if they're up, or you know, someone like that.
I think Southampton had a bid for him rejected in January of 13 million.
Yeah, good player.
Yeah, we've already mentioned Kenlock didn't have a particularly strong start to the game defensively, but then our first sight of goal, literally the first, he got forward really well down the left, cut inside, and had a shot deflected over. Joe, generally, over the years, has Kenlock in the academy teams, has he been better going forward than he is defensively? Or do you think it's that he's maybe struggling up against a higher calibre of winger?
A little bit of both. A lot of the times when he was playing for the under-18s, we were playing three at the back with wing-back. So he was pushed on quite a bit. And the under-23s, he's generally okay defensively, but you don't really get tested like you do in first-team football. But he has always been a player that's comfortable on the ball, likes getting forward and likes to try and get past his man and get crosses in. But I think his defending has massively improved in the last even 4 or 5 games. I know yesterday was an aberration, but his one-on-one defending is generally pretty good. But he seems to be reading the game a bit better and actually positioning himself a little bit better at the moment.
I thought, other than that, he had a good game yesterday.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, once he had this little burst forward, it seemed to get him going, and he was unlucky not to get the corner.
His distribution, I think, is pretty good as well.
Yeah, half decent. He's one of the players that we have to hope looks better in League One than he does in the Championship, and then we're maybe on to a winner. But until he's tested at that level,
he's never going to look, because of his, like, he's an odd one, isn't he, Kenlock? Because of his like running gait, or however they refer to it, I don't think he's ever going to look the most elegant of players. But I think as a player there, I think he's in, because where I sit, so especially, you know, second half, he's right in front, and I think he's come on quite a bit. And, you know, I see tweets, and I know people perhaps, we always say, see different games to other people, but, and I see tweets saying, oh, Kenlock, and like, get rid of him. It's really? You know, it's, there you go. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a huge, huge fan of Kenlock's, but I'm more than happy with him playing in that left back position ahead of Knudsen. And even Knudsen is—he's all right. He's an all right left back.
You always want a combination of both.
We know he's not going to be ours.
You want Kenlock's distribution and perhaps final ball, which is better than Knudsen, and Knudsen's probably upper body and defensive capabilities, I guess. But I think Kenlock will be fine.
If you'd have asked me 7 or 8 games ago about Kenlock, his sort of prospects for next season, I'd have said if we're going into the start of the season with him starting at left back, then we're going to be in a little bit of trouble, because I didn't think he'd be good enough to hold down that position. But since then, I think whoever's going to come in and challenge him at left back is in for a real fight, and I'd imagine they're going to do very well to get the shirt off him at the start of the season with how much he's improved. And that's what a run of games does do for a youngster.
Exactly.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what level Emmanuel would be playing at right now if he'd have been given more of a chance. But obviously, Bree had been brought in. He was always going to have to get games. But as it was, the rest of the first half, it was still Birmingham, the side that were on top. Bart, it made a pretty good save from Jota. Mm. For us, Judge had a free kick tipped over. I mean, that never really looked like going in, but Camp, sort of a bit of a camera save, pushed it over the top. It was a pretty miserable first half, all in all, wasn't it?
I mean, they were just, the midfield was non-existent. I mean, Dzel was no, well, we'll get to it, but it was no surprise when he was taken off at half-time. I think he was just anonymous. Bishop wasn't great. He wasn't getting on the ball.
Bishop was off it in the first
half. Yeah, he was off it first half. And I think, Joe, you said that it could have been either, perhaps one or the other would, or maybe, yeah, one or the other could have easily gone off, but it was Dzel who got the hook. It just wasn't, I don't know, it just wasn't his game yesterday. He was getting caught in possession, getting knocked off the ball. His passes just weren't finding the mark generally. One of those games, really.
Yeah, and had the second half had followed the same pattern as the first half and we'd have gone down with that performance, I don't think the reaction after the game would have been anywhere near what it was, because that was like off the back of the whole game, and the 90 minutes against Hull and that first 45 against Birmingham were as poor as we've been for probably two or three months. And
we could have easily been three down at half-time. Three down. Yeah.
Just one thing that I haven't mentioned about the first half before we move on to the second half is we had Jeremy Simpson in charge. I did get his name right, didn't I? Four bookings. Four.
There was barely a tackle in the game. Oh. And we came away with what, six bookings overall. And
it was one quite late one by Skews on someone who cut someone in half.
Skews' one was naughty. That was probably a bit bad.
Naughty. Yeah. But the others were so innocuous, really. Mm. Edwards, he pulled the play back and then waved the card at him. Not pulled it back, but the play must have gone on for 2 minutes before he waved it.
He didn't need to do that, did he?
And then when he did book him, that was like the foul that he gave against Bishop. It was like, well, I think he just got his card out of his pocket and was worried he was going to forget, so needed to stop play somehow just to get his his yellow. But
yeah,
he seemed to give so many free kicks when there was sort of corners and set pieces into the box. Almost every one of those was sort of stopped for a free kick. He really is probably the worst ref at this level.
Yeah, and he gets very animated with his decisions as well, doesn't he? When he points to a corner, he's very much like really gives it some.
Is it not the last two home games we've had him and Keith Stroud, haven't we? So we, Christ almighty, we couldn't have done any worse, could we?
But, yeah, to Paul Lambert's credit, he got them in at half-time. As we mentioned, it was Dzel that got the hook. He can't really have too many complaints about that. And Caden Jackson came on and thinking, OK, Jackson and Kwana up top together and sort of matching them up with a 4-4-2. Let's see how this works. And then almost immediately, it does work. Dave, can you talk us through what happened?
Yeah, I think it was a throw, wasn't it? Wide left, fairly deep in their half. I think back, it was pretty poor defending, actually, because they allowed him to get control of the ball. They weren't tight enough on him. It was only like a little dolly throw like that, about 5 yards from Kenlock. And then he does well. He shows some strength, gets the ball, drops his shoulder, so switches it onto his right foot. Well, the good thing about this is the cross goes in very early, so he doesn't even look. He just puts it in an area. And it's a brilliant cross, absolutely brilliant cross. Takes out the defence. Again, I think their player coming off the left, I think it was Pedersen, the left back, he gets done ball watching as well. It's a really nice finish, isn't it? Again, from Edwards coming off the right. It's a great finish. A side foot volley. Difficult skill. Really difficult skill. Right, he's close in, but you know, you see them shanked and shinned and everything.
He had a long time to think about it as well, didn't he? From where I was sat, it looked like he might go for it with his head, which he's done a couple of times this season.
Yeah,
And I want to say he made the right move.
Similar to another goal he scored this
season. Blackburn on the first day of the season.
Yeah.
And Reading, he scored a goal like that as well at home.
Yeah, Reading, exactly, almost similar. Great cross, superb early cross, and yeah, good finish. And yeah, out of nowhere, really. What the hell, where'd that come from? Yeah, great.
But it wasn't a flash in the pan, was it? We absolutely hammered them for the first 5 minutes of the second half.
Oh, we did.
Incredible, wasn't it? Josh Emmanuel, he had a pretty quiet first half offensively. Got forward, whipped in a lovely cross, didn't he? Joe, you must have thought, this is
from the other end. Judge hits it, and it looks like it's going in, then it hits a post and goes across the line, and you see, I think, Bishop fly in, and
the defender just gets a touch. Right?
The guy in front of me, when they were taking the corner, thought we'd scored. He was like, "Oh, I thought we'd scored," and so he was quite confused by that. But it must have been a brilliant piece of defending to get the ball away. But I'm sure the people in the North Stand had a better view of how well the defender did on that.
Just incredible how it hits the post at that angle and comes almost out straight and doesn't spin in. You know, it's a weird one. Yeah, because the posts aren't square,
Judge couldn't have hit it any better, could he, Dave? Like,
I think we
had a similar sort of view, but with a different vantage point.
Yeah.
In the co-op stand, and he hit it so well, didn't he? Like, don't want to use the cliche, maybe hit it too well, but if that had any sort of side spin on it, it probably would have gone in, wouldn't it? And then, before even the 50th minute mark, Kwani gets the ball with his back to goal, and suddenly he looks alive, holds it up, eventually comes to Jackson, he sort of bends one.
Good effort.
Yeah, it looks pretty close. I'm not sure quite how close it was. And by this point, I'm thinking, this is great. Like, if this is going to be the day, this is kind of how you want to go down, isn't it? But we did leave ourselves open a couple of times. Che Adams had a good chance. He had a 1-2 and then sort of rolled it straight at Bartosz Białkowski. And then it got a little bit quiet. As we mentioned, Nsiala ended up coming on for James Collins. Might be the last we see of him, but who knows? Then it was sort of into the last 10 minutes when the game sort of burst back into life. Judge had a decent effort, saved Edward's shot, I thought, looked like it was going in. I don't know, the defender made the block. Joe, did you have a better view of that than me?
That looked like it was going in, and that was right at the very end, wasn't it? That was almost in stoppage time, that one.
Yeah.
It looked brilliant like defending. That was going to be the winner, but great bit of defending.
Yeah, and then by this point, Ipswich Till I Die is ringing around Portman Road, and the referee then calls time on our 62-year stay in the top two leagues. A few of the players sort of slumped to the ground immediately. Dave, you've supported Ipswich for donkey's years. I didn't feel that different after it happened to how I felt about it in recent weeks.
No, nor did I, because I think it was on the cards. I think it was said on the pod before. I think, you know, way back in the QPR game in October, you think, hang on, it could happen. And then I think, well, someone said after one of the games, it was a Bristol City game, or maybe then the Millwall game, you think, oh, this probably will happen. And, yeah, I mean, we've been down for, not mathematically, but realistically, we've been down for weeks, haven't we, really? So now, I mean, of course, you were there to see it, and it's a really sad day, but I think I felt a bit like you, really. It was a bit of a... I've certainly felt worse. Well, we'll get onto that, because I know it's one of the Twitter questions. I've certainly felt worse about other relegations. I mean, the thing with this one, I think that at the start of the season, you just couldn't see it. I know it was a bit of a radical change at the start of the season with the, you know, the new younger sort of type manager coming in, but you just couldn't see it. Could I mean, you don't, you know, your club, you start the season with great hopes, and... Yeah, I don't know. it's almost it's happened now. Great. Let's just get on with it now.
Joe, I gather you were maybe slightly more emotional at full time.
Yeah, I wasn't too emotional, fortunately. I think a few people around me were, there were sort of a few tears shed around me where I was sitting. But I know, I just think that moment when you see the players slump down and you know that is it, we are... Everyone knew we were going down, but the actual moment where it's like, oh, we are actually down now, the WhatsApp comes through of a picture of Sky Sports, Ipswich are relegated and things, and you think, oh God, that is shit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that happens to other clubs, but not us. Let's go straight into the question from Ipswich. We'll go into the Twitter questions now, but we'll start with this one. We'll start with you, Dave. How does this relegation rank in comparison to the others that you've experienced? Thankfully, these aren't common for us, he says, but all things considered, this must be the worst one.
Yeah, it probably is because of where you're going to, you know, the others where you're going out of the Premier League or the First Division into the Championship or the old Division 2 in real money. I mean... Obviously, the first one in my lifetime was I'm a bit too young to remember 63, whatever it was, 64. But yeah, it was 86. And look, that was something that was gradually building up. We'd only survive by this, by relatively skin of our teeth the season before and a couple of seasons before that. The money, we knew the money was running out. We'd built the Pioneer Stand when all the season ticket, when all the seats were sold as season tickets and stuff. The players had all left. The great side had all left. There were still just a handful of players left. So that was sort of 86 was kind of inevitable, but going in a way that we were in contention right up to the last game. And I think Oxford won the last, you know, beat Arsenal after the last, very last game of the season to put us down. So yeah, that was shit, you know, that was pretty bad. When was the next one? I mean, yeah, Christ. 94, 95. Well, that should have happened the season before. If it had happened the season before, we wouldn't have suffered. I mean, that was a pretty dreadful season, but it's still in the top division.
Yeah. Joe, do you want to do 2001, 2002?
I wasn't that bothered about 2001, 2002, because it just felt like we were just going to bounce straight back.
Exactly right. Yeah. I just assumed, Christ, we're going to win the league with 100 points. Exactly.
That just felt like a bit of a balls up that season where we started off terribly. Then we had that brilliant run where we won sort of 6 or 7 out of 8 in the middle of the season. And then the season sort of picked back up. And then we'd lost to Bolton, and that was the shocker. And it just felt we'd made a bit of a balls up, but things would be all right. We still had a good team and we went down. Yeah. But obviously, I don't think anyone you speak to in football would have thought that 17 years later after that, we'd be exiting the division the wrong way, never having been back in the Premier League after that sort of amazing first season there. But like I say, it's just maybe I was in sort of sixth form playing sport a lot there. So I was going to all the home games, but I wasn't as invested in that season because everything just felt so easy then. We just felt like on this long upward curve and it was never going to end.
Yeah. Mm. Such an Ipswich season, though. Yeah, you're looking back, you know, if you're going to have a season like that after the season we had previously, it only happened to us, if you know what I mean. It was just, you couldn't make that up, but, you know. How the hell did that happen, really? But like you, Joe, I thought, oh, we're going to... Especially after, what was it? Was it the second game when we put 6 past Leicester, I think? 6-0, 6-1, something like that.
Yeah, we were awesome.
We're going to get 100 points and 100 goals, you know? And then it all went horribly wrong.
It's one of my favourite Ipswich teams. The team that finished 7th in Division 1 the year after we got relegated was awesome. Yeah, and you think they didn't make the playoffs for one reason or another. Obviously, there was a lot of things going on off the pitch at the time. But how can Ipswich fans be so confident that we're going to be right up there in League One next season with the players that we've got?
Back then, was it Satanta or something? Didn't the TV deal go tits up?
ITV.
ITV Digital, sorry. Yeah, so that didn't help.
Watching the season review back the other week. Not all of it. Someone posted it up on those sort of days. So I watched a bit of it. And sort of towards the business end of the season, we went sort of 7 or 8 unbeaten. We were on a good run. And going into March, and it's like, oh, we're now 1 point off the playoffs or 2 points off the playoffs. And then it's like, before the next game, Herman Hreiðarsson and Darren Ambrose exited the club. Yeah. It's like, imagine that now. You're 2 points off the playoffs in March on a brilliant unbeaten run, and you sell 2 of your best players. I know there's transfer risks now, but that just would not happen, would it? You'd find a way to get to the end of the season.
I honestly think, I mean, you know more about this, Joe, but I think that was a case that, if you remember, it was the fire sale when we needed to get rid of them to not go into admin again, I think. That was basically it, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I can't imagine that was the only way out of it. I imagine in hindsight that was wrong, but...
Yeah. I think that was a sliding doors moment that Rich might have missed there.
Right, we'll move on to the next question, which is from Super Franz, who's a regular contributor. Thanks, everyone, so much for all of the questions that you sent in. Twitter was red hot today. Apologies in advance if I don't get to read out your question. Super Franz asks, and I'll go to you first, Joe. In percentage terms, where does the responsibility lie for our relegation shared between Evans, McCarthy, Hurst, Lambert, the fans, and anyone else?
Well, the bulk of the responsibility has got to go to Marcus Evans. In reality, he allowed his manager, Mick McCarthy, who was a good manager at this level, he allowed him to fall out with the fans without keeping him under rein. He didn't step in and stop that. And when Mick left us in a decent position with a good squad. We knew in Easter Sunday last year, which was like March, end of, that middle of March, that he was going to be leaving, which allowed Evans time to get a new manager in, to get the squad assessed, to have a little play at the end of last season. And we ended up having the most protracted managerial search in history, which ended with a manager being appointed in early June, who then had a week's holiday. And it's like, we've lost all the advantage we possibly had here. And like I say, Hurst has to take his share of the blame, but ultimately Evans is an experienced football chairman, and he should have been saying, what are you doing? You're selling 3-4 players with a hell of a lot of championship experience to bring him in. You're trying to do too much too quickly, and the manager's managed, but like I say, Evans takes the brunt of the blame for me.
So shall we have a go at the percentages? Dave, do you want to... So how much should we say Marcus Evans? Maybe 60%?
Oh, probably more.
More 70, than 60?
75,
75%, okay.
75%.
Okay, so should we then put 10% onto Paul Hurst?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, same.
Because ultimately he did sell those players, and he picked the players with no championship experience.
So, going back to Paul Hurst, do you think there was no way he was first choice? Do you think?
Whether or not he was first choice, Evans didn't want to make the appointment until he'd spoken to him, and I just think that was a mistake. Once Shrewsbury went into the playoffs, and especially once they qualified for the final, that should have ruled him out of the race. Jack Ross was sitting there waiting, yep. And I think become the clubhouse leader. He was the man Evans wanted, but
yeah.
Evans dilly-dallied and waited for Hurst to become available and lost him. And Hurst may have, once Hurst was interviewed, he may have became the top candidate. We'll never know, though, because Hurst was effectively, by the time he was appointed, he was the only man it could be, because all the other options had been exhausted. And I know, I just think it was such a, like I say, you're giving yourself, when I lived down in Southampton, Paul Sturrock was appointed the manager down there, and he came in with about 8 games left at the end of the season. And it's just, that's such a perfect time to appoint a manager. They get a chance to look at the squad, play proper games, and then go into the pre-season knowing exactly what they need to do. So it was just a stupidly long process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did drag on and on and on, didn't it? 75% Marcus Evans, 10%. How much culpability do the servers at halftime in the Sir Bobby Robson stand have to take? That must be at least 5-10%.
Yeah, absolutely,
because they're slowing down the money being brought into the club. Another financial question, this time from Mullet. I'll go to you, Dave, for this one. So Mick McCarthy made Marcus Evans some money. Hurst spent some money. Which way will it go under Lambert? Does he need to sell? And does he have enough value in the squad to make it better again?
That's a very good question. I think he probably needs to sell. I think someone will go. The squad, looking at the squad, obviously you think a goal scorer. I think we need a real old school, battle-hardened midfield enforcer. And I'd say we also need a fairly old school wise head up front as a goal scorer as well. For me, they're the two keys. So whether you'll get those on out of contracts, freebie, stuff like that, I'm not really sure. But to get any quality down, I think he'll probably have to sell. But I should think his budget has been cut to cloth accordingly, I would have thought. Joe, you probably know more about, I had some whispers about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think his budget is what he was hoping for, but we'll see how it comes out. Obviously, we've had Evans's statement that's come out today, and it's talking about not using loan players, using a lot of youngsters. And while that is what we want to see, it does become, is there an element of just cost cutting in that? And if you are planning on using the youngsters, you need to make sure that the senior guys that are playing around them are, you're signing some, you're bringing in some top players at that level. You need to sign the players of the caliber of the Alan Judges and the Bartosz Białkowskis and Will Keane, if he's one we get over the line, to play alongside these young players. You can't just put some journeymen in there with them.
I see one of the, goalkeepers perhaps going. Gherkin, perhaps, I would have thought, maybe. I don't know.
Gherkin's contract is up, isn't it?
Oh, well, yeah, you're right. We said this before. You can't just throw in these, even at League One. I mean, it's going to be tough. You know, you can't just throw these young kids in on mass sort of thing. So, yeah, you're going to need, Joe's right. You're going to need a degree, experienced, battle-hardened players. But, yeah, they've got to be the right sort of players, obviously.
Okay, we'll move back to a more historical question now from Alex Mills. And this, I guess, links quite nicely to what we were talking about with the sliding doors moment. Well, it does quite literally, because he says, what do you collectively think was the number one sliding doors moment of the last 10 years where things could have turned out massively differently? I'm probably going to go with the transfer window in 14-15. Was it the playoff season was 14-15, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also think the transfer window in 15-16 over January, because we had Ryan Fraser at that point, and I actually thought on paper, although Murphy wasn't banging in the goals, I actually thought we had a slightly better team that year. If he could have brought in a right back or another striker, I think we could have had a good go at it. But
didn't Fraser get injured? Is that
he
not,
did. He did eventually.
Boxing Day, was it?
It wasn't Boxing Day, no. It was in like February, maybe March.
Fraser actually only played 15 games for us.
He didn't play many games at all.
Mad, yeah. Isn't it? For how much of an impact he made in those 15 games.
Incredible, wasn't
it? If you'd just got another 15 out of him, that would have probably put us in the playoffs.
Look at the impact he's having now, for God's sake. What a player.
I'd agree with Mikey on that. January transfer window in January 2015, when we needed to make a push for the playoffs, we elected to take the cheap route and then brought in Chris Wood and Zeke Fries after the window closed on emergency loans, which then meant Chris Wood was able to be recalled to go and sit on the bench at Leicester when we just about got him fit, and he was just starting to purr a bit away at Watford. He had a very good game and then went back. And then I'd also say that summer window, summer 2015, we sold Tyrone Mings for £8 million, and Evans used that money to cover his losses. Where had that £8 million gone back into the team, and we bought in a couple of, like, Callum Wilson went that summer for, or was that the summer before? £2-3 million.
Summer before, wasn't it? We got, that was a trade. We got Pittman and Fraser. Yeah.
Fraser on loan. But like I say, the players we bought in that season, it was sort of Pittman, Fraser, Jonathan Douglas, Ainsley Maitland-Niles. And it's like, you've just pocketed £8 million for Tyrone Mings. You need to go and spend some of that money to give Mick a chance. And I think Mick was not happy to keep playing the poor relation card, and I don't think that was the right thing to do for the club at that point.
No.
David, you go along with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Certainly. The 14-15, the January thing was just ridiculous. I don't know. The perfect opportunity to push on. What, we were second, weren't we, going in New Year's Day or something? Just the perfect opportunity to push on and bought in Sears, who did well, let's face it. You know, he did really well at the end of the season, but just was never near enough, was it?
Mm. Yeah, and did we paint the turnstiles in that 10 years? Was that predate that?
I think they need painting again, right, if you've seen
it. Yeah, scruffy, somebody did looks ask about... I didn't screenshot this one, but yeah, somebody did ask how you both feel about the state of Portman Road.
It's shabby, isn't it?
I'd say one positive this season is the pitch seems to be much better.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd go with that.
So it's not all bad, is it?
I know they're starting to do a lot of work up the training ground under Lambert's request. I think he's wanting them to move the first team back across to the Playford Road side, away from the Bent Lane facility. So that is something that is being done at the moment.
I feel like it's a lose-lose situation, because if they do go up and clean the roofs of the stand and they paint the turnstiles again, everybody like, oh, he's spending his money on that, but we need a striker and things like that. But yeah, we can't have it all, can we?
And unfortunately, that might be the sort of place we're fishing in.
Yeah,
a lake we're fishing in. Yeah, I can afford it for the cost of a striker that matches the painting the turnstiles and repairing the roof or something.
Yeah. God.
We need to sign one of those.
How did we get here? Those
international players from like San Marino or Andorra, where the commentator tells you all game that they're a postman or a fireman. Well, need to get one who's a painter and decorator, and he can double up trades.
Yeah,
that's what we want. By the way, talking about that, it reminded me. I heard Harry and Rich talking about Nigel Cleghorn on the pod the other day. Being he got on a Darrell's team as an Ipswich Birmingham player. And of course, he was a fireman, wasn't he? He came to town. He was a fireman playing part-time football. So, see, we have been there before.
I was following Steve McCool the other day around town. I think he's now gone in the trade as either a garden person or a painter and decorator. So he's got a van, like Mickey Stockwell, driving around town.
Yeah, nice.
And J Tab A mate of mine, Henry, recently interviewed him for the Pride of Anglia magazine.
Yeah.
Apparently he was playing rugby at the weekends and helping his dad out on what sounded like a building site during the week. But I've since heard that he's now lost 2 stone
to be
and his trainer's be a jockey. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, good lad.
Yeah,
love it.
He really is he's the ultimate jack of all trades. Isn't
oh, he's
he?
Really, like, he's a really good golfer. He's one
of the best all-round sportsmen.
Really good golfer
ever had.
Yeah, yeah, really good golfer,
rugby
yeah.
player.
Yeah,
half decent at football as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, so PRB9 wants to know, Joe, do we really expect anything to change whilst Marcus Evans is still the owner, or are things just going to carry on as normal, just mediocre stuff?
I'd like to say yes, things are going to change, but I don't really see that they are. I think we're going to be, if at best, we're going to be a sort of lower half championship team because he simply doesn't have the money to compete with the teams at the top of the league. Like, he's willing to put in this, what's that, about 100 grand a week, doesn't he? He's putting into the club, writing a check for to keep it running. But ultimately, you need to double that and maybe even double it again to compete with the teams at the top of this league. But if we can get it right off the pitch, if we can get the academy pipeline, getting players through there and come up with a strategy that does something a bit different, like sort of Sheffield United have got, like Norwich have got, then potentially. But I just don't see that he's a competent enough owner to do that. He doesn't seem to. There's all this talk about him being more hands-on and coming into the club. I just want to say, look, Marcus, just appoint a proper CEO and let them run the football club rather than you stay in there, turning up 1 week out of every three and slowing down every decision that's made.
Did you see anything about he wasn't there yesterday, was he?
No, I think he's on holiday.
Did you see any of that Simon Jordan interview on TalkSport?
I had heard it, and I think he makes some good points. But...
Oh, very good points. Oh, all right, he still did the almost, didn't quite. Say, Mike, either be careful what you wish for scenario. But he made some really good points about Marcus Evans. He said he was a friend, he knew him, and he said he really just couldn't. Whether this was hindsight, I'm not sure. But he said, you know, he's only was back at the day, he couldn't really understand. You know, he had no really interest in football. And more importantly, he had no empathy with Ipswich Town, you know. You can say Simon Jordan took Palace into admin, reasons, whatever they were. But as he said, at least he was a fan and invested. As in that, not just financially wise, invested feelings for the club, you know. So, yeah, that was quite interesting.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You win. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't, I still can't picture the fabric of the club changing that much over the summer, that we'll be a winning team with a winning sort of feel about it.
We're just reliant
around the place.
We're totally reliant on Lambert turning it round and continuing to keep up his sort of brilliant PR offensive that he's done so far. And it's asking a lot of one man to do it when that man's going to be under pressure if he doesn't start the season well.
Yep. It is going to be tough. Yeah. And
I've got another...
I've seen people think, oh, yeah, we're going to... Yeah, we're side judge and this, that and the other. We're going to go down. We're going to walk that league. Can't see it. Cannot see it. No. I hope I'm wrong. I can't see it at all. And I think... Look, if we can get anywhere near a top six finish, I think we'd have done pretty well after the season we've had. Really, you know, you've got to get that winning mentality, no matter what division in. You know, you've got to get that winning mentality back into the, you know, back into the club, and you know, until you get that, it could be painful.
Yeah.
Off the pitch is going to be horrible, isn't it, Joe? Yeah. I mean, you know, again, at the club, you know, the staff and that, it's going to be horrible, isn't it?
I'm sure there'll be a lot of people losing their jobs in the next couple of weeks. The whole club is going to take a haircut, really, isn't it, in all areas, ticketing, corporate, the hospitality side of it. There's going to be a lot of people losing their jobs. It's sad for the town.
Oh, it's terribly sad, because the football club's a huge thing for the town. The season tickets are going to be this might be a question. I don't know. Was season tickets a question coming up, Mikey, or anything?
No, it wasn't actually. But yeah, but, you know, season tickets. We're getting announcement on Wednesday on season tickets, aren't we? So maybe that is a question from me to you two. What do you think makes sense? Because you've got to strike a balance, haven't you? You can't just charge a pittance to fill the stands, because the club has got a function.
Yeah,
and if we get to keep one backroom staff member or somebody that works in the club, like an unsung hero, if charging slightly more for season tickets means that they can carry on in their job, then so be it.
It's how they pitch it. It's going to be, well, the only way they can pitch it is that obviously the judge thing was a huge thing. So I should imagine he'll figure quite highly. And obviously the youngsters, you know, like Jack Lancaster and the rest, they're going to have to, aren't they? It's the only way they can pitch it, really.
Yep, and I don't know, Lambert has really talked up this big announcement and what we're doing, and I think he's oversold almost what is going to happen unless there's a huge...
Yeah. I mean, Joe, you hit the nail. You may have hit the nail. I mean, could that be a CEO? But he wouldn't be making...
No. Well, Everton will be making the decision, yeah.
Yeah.
But you almost can't appoint a director of football now because Lambert is there, but Neal is doing this director of football operations job. But I think on top of that, he's having to do what was effectively Ian Milne's job.
Yeah, exactly, that's what I was going to say.
His old job in the academy, so he's still the academy manager. He's the director
of football operations. He's got more jobs than Jay Tab, hasn't he?
Well, there's a cost cut in there straight away, isn't it? I mean, Milne's gone and... Yeah, it should be interesting, but yeah. I don't know what a realistic discount or reduction would be, really. God knows, I don't know. You know, I'll still go. I'm still going to go, but buy me ticket and still go. But yeah, I don't know. Be interesting.
That it will. ITFC Netherlands has a question. It's on a similar vein, and basically we're in a financial world of doom. He's saying, with the 45% pay cuts on existing contracts, there's going to be huge weight differences in wages in the dressing room next year. He's saying that, in his opinion, that's a recipe for disaster. What are your thoughts on that, Joe?
Well, surely if everyone's having the pay cuts, which it sounds as though that it is, wages should remain at a similar level almost. You're not going to have somebody earning double what.
Like, but Judge must have been brought in on
a league
on
one
bigger
contract.
Wages than but a big League One contract. Like, he must be on 10,000. I'm just speculating. And then you're going to have... But then I suppose it's going to be the younger players that are going to be earning less, isn't it? So
possibly, yeah. I just think that for all the sort of criticisms of Evans, one thing that there is sorted is there is a very definite wage structure in place, and there isn't your silly high earners in there like when we had like a Jimmy Bullard or a Michael Chopra that were earning 3-4 times more than other players. I think it is all relatively in line with their sort of squad status. So that should stay that way.
Okay, let's go back onto the on-pitch matters for a couple of questions at least. Ben Frost wants to know, Dave, should Kenlock and Emmanuel be our starting fullbacks in the first game of next season?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Good enough?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. With the right experience, as Joe's already referred to, you know, alongside them, whether that be Luke Chambers or, you know, I must admit, I'd quite like to see, given a chance, Wolfenden, who's obviously had a pretty decent season with Swindon. I think Joey's been virtually ever present, hasn't he?
Yeah, no, he's played nearly every game he's been available for down there. You know, sometimes a right back, but...
But, yeah, adaptable player, so I'd like to see him come back. So, you know, if he comes back into the equation, then, you know, you've got NCAA, you know, you're going to need someone experienced along, you know, alongside him. Luke Chambers, our new player of the year, has obviously just signed a new 2-year contract. I mean, you know, had we still been in the championship, he's shot, in my opinion, he's gone at championship level. He's shot at championship level, but at League One, you know, who knows? You know, he could well be okay at League One, I think, for another season or so, and be the necessary experience you need, certainly at the back, and I'd say through the spine of the team as well.
A season or so in League One. that is the reality, isn't it? I think the most likely scenario next season is we finish mid-table.
Score 100 goals and get 100 points.
Oh, wouldn't it be great? You know, look, wouldn't it be absolutely...
Yeah. We want that to happen.
I think we'll be right up there. I think there's such a huge gap now between the Championship and League One. You see the teams that went down 2 years ago... Rotherham, Wigan and Blackburn went up, and but for Paul Hurst Shrewsbury, they'd have been up by 15 points. This season, Sunderland are second, Barnsley are third, and Burton are still ninth or tenth. And they were a team that had a League One budget when they were in the Championship, so it's not like they're a big team going down. I think the Championship teams that drop down, they have such an advantage because they don't have to fall into this salary management protocol where you can only spend 60% of your turnover, that you've got to get up in that first year. And I'm pretty sure we will be in the top four or five, but the problem is there's a big difference between finishing third or fourth, because then you're in the playoffs, and then it's a lottery.
It is a lottery.
I really hope you're right, Jay. And I suppose that is kind of, that's realistic optimism, because you're basing it on what's happened this season, the season before, and a lot of the teams that have come up haven't been amazing. For me, it's more, as I've mentioned, we've become a soft touch as a club. We're used to losing week in, week out. Can we mount a playoff push?
That was my point. It's what you're carrying into next season. It's negative. On the pitch, it's negative.
Psychological baggage.
Absolutely what we've got. You know, on off the pitch, you know, Paul Lambert's come in brilliantly with the PR and everything else. There seems to be a good feeling. There's much more affinity between, obviously, the team and the fans, and he's done that brilliantly. But, shit, you're going to be carrying a lot of negativity on the pitch into next season.
At least we're not losing. We've only lost 3 out of the last 11, isn't it, now? So we've turned that side of it round.
We
haven't been turned over really badly, have we? And Lambert's had... We've basically had a 5-6 month run-up to next season. So we should be in a position where he knows everything about all his players. The only thing I would say, though, is hopefully he looks at that second half yesterday and sees how much difference it made playing two up front. Because the problem is, in the first half it happened, Quainer goes out wide and then we get across in the box and there's no one in there. Look where the goal came from. Jackson getting out wide and putting across in the box and still having Quainer in there and Edwards. Jackson got out wide again, played Quainer in.
Yeah.
The strikers like to get involved in the play, and unless you've got someone, and I think Will Keane is probably capable of being that guy who's very good. He can drop in, he can play up top, he can play the goals, but you've got to be a very, very good striker to be able to play up front on your own in that system we're playing. And
look, again, injuries this season. I mean, to key player. I mean, I think I said this on the pod a couple of weeks back. How the season might have been different. And I'm not saying he'd have played every single game, but with a fit John Walters.
Yep.
Who knows? And again, Keane and Sears, you know, Sears going into Norwich match and Keane, I think, had only perhaps just joined, played a couple of games maybe up till then. You know, you keep those fit and there's goals there. You know, you think they're a great combination potentially.
Nadi Amy, if you could have got anything out of them.
But you know what I'm saying. Realistically, I'm talking about, you know, people that really played this season, for God's sake. I think Keane's a great player, and I think Keane would be really well at League One, but whether we could afford his wages, Joe, I wouldn't be so certain. I don't know.
No, it's going to be a difficult deal to do because it's going to involve a relocation, isn't it, effectively? And there's probably a lot of clubs where I don't know where he's based, presumably somewhere near to Hull. There's going to be a lot of clubs within an hour's travel time from where he lives that he can pick him up.
He likes an expensive breakfast as well.
We'll know how much he likes Milsoms, won't we, if he comes or not. Demetrius is actually asking that question. He wasn't at the game. So he wants to know, how did we look playing 4-4-2? And the answer is we looked bloody good.
Yeah,
it was only 45 minutes. But he's asking, is that the formation for next year? And do we have the players for it? I'd say at the moment we don't really have the strikers.
No,
we don't have two good enough strikers to play it. But maybe by signing one good one, Jackson might be better in that formation.
I like, again, if you keep him fit, well. I like Harrison, and I quite like the thought of Harrison. And Jackson's got a bit, I think Jackson's got a bit about him. He's quick, and I think he's quite aware, and he runs the channels quite well. I think Harrison can play that role. I think he's deceptively good in the air, and I think the ball does seem to stick to Harrison as well. Again, has he had that real continuity of games? No, he hasn't. So you'd think those as a pair in League One would be fine.
I wonder how much our lack of sort of a good wide striker has affected us goal-wise, because I haven't got the stats, but it's just sort of a thought that came to me is when Lambert first came in, we were scoring a lot of goals in those first few games. And when we had sort of two at Reading, one at Preston, two at Bristol. And when Freddie Sears got injured, is that the point when we stopped being able to score? Because we had a striker playing up, holding the ball up, and even though it was only Jordan Roberts, Freddie Sears was making some intelligent runs around him.
I think it was a big miss.
Around him, and we haven't really looked like scoring many goals in this 4-3-3, 4-5-1, 4-2-3-1, whatever you want to call it. We haven't looked like scoring many goals, and unless we're going to sort of play as we did in the early Lambert days, where you've got Sears running off him and potentially another player like that on the other side who can score goals, we need to go two up front, or we are not going to score enough goals to get out of that league next year.
Totally agree. And that's a shame. Yeah, Sears, you're not going to have him till what?
Christmas.
Probably not Christmas.
See him until Christmas
at the earliest. You know, yeah. Such a shame. He was having a good season. I think Sears was, you know, considering, you know, where we'd been this time last season, he's just about to score the goal against Reading, wasn't he? His first goal in 35 games, whatever it was. You know, he was having a good season. And, you know, what was it? Just a block tackle knee to knee at Norwich, when it was just an innocuous thing. Just
same as Ben Morris even this year. I think he'd be a player that could play in that wide forward role, and you might get a bit more out of than almost.
Was he Achilles or cruciate? Was Ben Morris?
He's cruciate. Morris. Falami was Achilles.
Yeah,
it's just crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, bad.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Barty UK1 wants to know, I'll send this one to you, Joe. Is Andre Dizel going to be up for League One in terms of the physicality? Could he just need a bruiser alongside him to flourish?
I think if you actually watch any League One football, it is physical to an extent, but the midfielders get a lot of time to play. It's not like the Championship where it's pressing all over the pitch. You watch, even if you just watch the highlights show on Quest after the Championship goals, a lot of goals just start from sort of the midfielders getting a lot of time on the ball and the defenders sort of sitting back and being able to be broken down. That if Dizel is going to sit and play in a deep role and can pick passes and be protected, then he could be a player that really finds his feet in that league. And to be honest, he needs to, because he's in danger of his career just sort of drifting away otherwise.
He's the one I would sell. If we had to sell one now, he's the one I'd sell.
Out of the young players, I'd probably agree, because you'd probably get the best value for him.
Yeah, but you would. You would. Yeah. Now you would.
I'm gonna dip back into a bit of misery here, and then we'll go on to a couple of lighter questions.
When did we dip out?
Okay. Rich, I ignored the second half of his question. Just quickly, both of you, what do you prefer, cream eggs or mini eggs?
Mini eggs.
Yeah, mini eggs all day long. Yeah, cream eggs are a bit too sickly for me.
Yeah, I find it frustrating that you can't eat more than one of them.
Yeah,
the joy is just over far too quickly, isn't it?
Yeah, you're dead spot on mini eggs all day long.
Yeah. Cobbled Massive wants to know, why do we allow Marcus Evans to get off so easily? He's the consistent one in the downfall of our club since he took over. Nobody else. He can't go because he owns the club and there isn't a buyer. But should we at least be calling him out for the damage that he's done? I'm going to just say, although I completely agree with you, one of the good things the last few weeks and something that a lot of Ipswich fans have clung on to is having a little bit of feel-good factor in the terraces and bringing a positive atmosphere, because we've done the negative atmosphere, and God, it was like it needed to be done, but it really doesn't make going to football enjoyable, and new people aren't going to come in either. Yeah, we can't ignore the job that Marcus Evans is or isn't doing, but I don't know. For me, I'm quite glad that we haven't brought that sort of toxicity at this stage, but maybe it will come back over the summer and then in League One. But
I think Cobbold Massive Joe might be mine and your mate, Pat Lewis.
Yeah, Pat's not a big fan of Marcus, is he?
No.
I think it's tough with Evans, because generally everyone thinks the main problem is that he's not rich enough, but in reality, the money he's putting in is okay. The problem is he's made poor decisions with the appointments of managers, and if he'd have got those right, and if he'd have managed the managers better, we wouldn't be in this position.
Yeah, in hindsight, it was terrible. Magilton going, really. Who knows? Who knows how it would have turned out? Who knows?
Okay,
right from the very start.
Tim Pashley, my fellow Southeast tractor boy, he wants to know, do you think the owner statement suggests that we'll let Collins go and play the likes of Wolverton and basically use the current squad and Bart? Oh no, he's asking, do you think we'll cash in on Bart and just go with the youngsters?
Probably missed the boat a bit on Bart, haven't we now?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I don't know. A lot of teams in League One seem to have a lone goalkeeper, don't they? They seem to bring in a lone keeper from the Premier League, but I know we're saying we don't want to do loans, but you're going to need to do some. And
Nick Pope would be good.
Yeah, it'd be decent. But
yeah, he's gone. Yeah, incredible.
I'd probably say that Bart will be here next year. I struggle to see him leaving. I don't see what's in it for him to leave, because he's not had a good enough season where he's going to go somewhere and guaranteed to be number one. And I don't think he's going to want to go and be a number two anywhere at his age.
No. He's still not good enough on the deck, is he? His distribution's still not good enough. Yeah, with his feet, which is such a big part. Collins, I think. Oh, I can't see Collins staying.
I don't know about Collins. I wouldn't be massively surprised if he does stay, if he tries to get a pre-season behind him and sees how he goes from there. But
I know this is Stuart Watson thinks that Collins is going to stay. But this is fitness.
But this is my worry is that, are we bringing Wolfenden and bring him back, and then all of a sudden that loan window closes at the end of August, and if you end up with sort of Chambers, Entiala, Wolfenden and Indaba, that's not enough, is it? You lose Chambers from that, and you're in big trouble there. So you're going to need to bring in another senior centre back, and if Collins is clearly above the level required for League One, and he's the sort of player, fitness permitting, like Judge, that you need to play alongside these youngsters.
You need
proper footballers that have played at the top level, that know what they're doing in that league.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it is an interesting one, the Collins thing, and I guess that's probably going to rumble on until the end of the season. So yeah, here's a more light-hearted question, or depending on which way you look at it. I mean, some people just find the whole thing. I know Mullet doesn't really like the talk of the League One tour and things like that, and isn't looking forward to seeing his club down there. Others are quite looking forward to seeing the new stadiums and things like that. James Gulk's question, though, surrounds the FA Cup. Which non-league team would you like to draw in the first round of the FA Cup next season?
Wow. Were Leicester in it? Leicester were in the... Were they, yeah, did they make the first round proper?
I think Gillingham, did they play, I think?
somewhere down the south coast.
Ipswich Wanderers, would they get there?
Woodbridge Town, imagine that. They play FA Trophy, don't they? No?
Yeah, they play in the Vars, but yeah, I mean, the likes of Woodbridge, and even more so Ipswich Wanderers, they'd have to win something like 8 games against higher league opposition.
Yeah, Leicester's a bit more realistic.
Leicester aren't very good at the moment, though. Felixstowe Walton, perhaps?
Needham Market. I went to watch them against Cambridge a few years back, and I think that was the first round of the FA Cup.
I mean, Pash will want Havant and Waterlooville, I guess.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I wouldn't really want a non-league away game at the Cap.
They might be in the league, mightn't they, Salford?
Somewhere close where I've not been, that'll do me.
Shall we move on to questions?
First round of the FA Cup. Oh my God.
When is that? Is that November?
First week of November, Joe?
It's going to be fireworks. Shall we have a look at the other championship results? We could just look at the League One results, couldn't we? Because
let's talk about the Sunderland Coventry game. Come on, we'll take a load of those games.
What happened in Sunderland Coventry?
Sunderland 4, Coventry 5. What a game that was! And that's a very good point you made about sort of central midfielders, having time on the ball, because the goals also. I watched the goals this morning, I think, on Quest and. Yeah, exactly. Two or three of those Coventry goals came from lovely interplay in midfield. Oh, he's having a lovely old time in centre and mid and just threading balls through. And he thought, that could be Dizelle threading one through for Jackson next season or something like that. They had a lovely old time. But 5-4, it was like a throwback to good old Joe's days, that was.
And that's really blown the League One sort of top two race wide open, hasn't it?
Because Luton got turned over by Charlton, didn't they?
Yeah, I think Luton are probably up, but Portsmouth won.
Portsmouth, Barnsley and Sunderland are all within a point of each other, aren't
they? Yeah, and Portsmouth go to Sunderland in a few weeks' time. I think it might even be over Easter bank holiday.
They're going to take revenge for the checker trade.
Yeah.
That'll be feisty, Portsmouth-Sunderland.
Yeah.
Lincoln got promoted into League One.
They did. Yeah,
Luton lost yesterday, but Luton is still away at the top by a couple of points.
Six clear, are they? I think.
Yeah, they should. It's like a big.
I know they just come off a 25 game unbeaten run or something, wasn't it? Ridiculous. So I tell you, I saw the goals in that Charlton game. Johnny Williams looked quite prevalent in that game, I've got to say. With shaved hair, he looked totally different and like.
He's bald with a beard now, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's still
got that lovely smile, hasn't he?
Ah, what a player.
And I suppose that's a good sign. Seeing players like Johnny Williams flourishing in a league that is supposedly really physical.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And there's somebody that always gets crunched. I doubt he's changed his style of football that much. I know he hasn't been completely injury free, but he's been playing more than he's been missing.
No, I don't think it's great. Tranches of the season like he has done previously.
No.
Anyway, that's League One done.
Yeah, so in the Championship, big win this one for Aston Villa over Bristol City. Villa, I think quite a few people fancy them now in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, they've got the momentum. Eight wins on the spin. They've got the momentum.
Got the best player in the league.
And that was interesting yesterday. It's the first
six wins
one.
Out six.
They didn't. He didn't play yesterday, I don't think.
Did he not?
I think so.
Must be the first time they've won without Grealish.
I think apart from against us. 2-30, without him, 2-13 or something. Yeah. Oh, it was ridiculous.
The first penalty was soft as anything, but a good weekend for Leeds up there, though. Them winning, Sheffield United drawing. I know they're probably struggling to catch Norwich, but Norwich drawing as well.
Yeah. And they won it quite dramatically, didn't they, Leeds? Have you seen the video of the guide dog celebrating in the home end?
No.
There's obviously a blind or partially sighted Leeds fan, and when everyone's jumping up and down celebrating, you actually see the dog jumping for joy and barking. It is absolutely.
I mean, I'm so looking forward to that. That's the one game to look. Yeah, I know it's the last game and stuff, but I just hope there's something still on that game because that would just be brilliant, wouldn't it? I mean, it'd be a brilliant atmosphere. Yeah. Leeds will make it for a brilliant atmosphere. All right. There'll probably be the most police we've ever seen at Portman Road since Man United in the 1970s, probably. But do you know what I mean? I think it'll be superb. Yeah. I just hope something's still on that game. I think Norwich will be away by then, so that won't matter. But, you know, if they need something out of that game to clinch automatic, that'll be great.
And how many tickets have you flogged to Leeds fans so far, Dave?
Perhaps I'm the only one. I haven't had any requests that I'm aware of. It's all gone from a spam filter, I think. I don't know.
I've done one and a half.
One and a half.
So, okay. My father-in-law's a Leeds fan, so I'm taking him. But
I thought you meant you sold it to the visually impaired guy and his guide dog.
and my wife has a soft spot for Leeds, so she's coming. So it'll be one and a half.
That will be good. I mean, that'd be, you know, I should imagine it'll be a pretty full house, won't it?
Yeah. Hopefully so. Leeds fans will find a way. They will find a way of getting.
There'll be 20,000 there, won't there? Should be. Yeah.
But just to go back to a point Mikey made earlier about the season tickets, if the price are a bit higher, it means a few more people could keep their jobs. If you gave Leeds 8,000 tickets on the last day of the season, the extra income from that would probably cover any redundancies we're going to make.
Do you know what? I can't understand that. They're just getting the, what, 2.5?
Well,
it's the
puppet masters of the police. I doubt that was an Ipswich Town decision to do that.
Yeah, probably.
I really do doubt it because they cashed in last season and we thought about time they started to think like that.
How many were there last year? They had the whole
five and a half.
How was it?
Yeah. Can you remember, were there any?
I think there was a flare flown down into the section.
There was a lot of missiles being chucked and things like that. Okay. But
yeah. Don't put I think it is below them.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Yeah, I think it's Suffolk Police not wanting on an Easter bank holiday having loads of Leeds fans running amok.
They're going to come anyway and run even more of an amok. At least if you have a stadium, you know where they're going to be for 3 hours and they're going to be off the booze and contained for 3 hours. It's an absolute no-brainer. I think it's really silly, but I'd imagine the police, like you're saying, more than that, because I know... I'm sure I'm not breaching any confidences here, but when I've done the fans forum thing, Steve Pearce, who is pretty important at Ipswich Town behind the scenes, he was really keen for these extra allocations to the away fans because he's a proper football fan and he thinks it makes for a much better atmosphere.
Like
it did against Leeds when we played him in January. And like I say, I'm sure he'd have definitely been pushing for it. And Marcus, knowing how cute he is around a pound note, must have been pushing for it as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
One to look forward to, though, anyway.
Yeah. It is a good... And the Sheffield United one away as well. I mean, that's a game that's got something riding on it. We might get a hiding, but who knows? It might be fairly enjoyable playing a part in the promotion
race. How ironic would that be if, for arguments, like, I don't know, and it could well come to that, although it probably won't by then, because they'll be up, but...
They'll be up,
I don't know. We nick a draw with Sheffield United and that clinches promotion for them up the road.
We're the kingmakers this season.
I think we are. We are, aren't we? Yeah. Looking at it, yeah.
So looking at the other results, Derby kept their playoff hopes alive. 4-0 win over Bolton.
Mason Mount
hat-trick, yeah. Ashley Cole assist.
Different
Middlesbrough, despite protests about Tony Pulis, beat Hull 1-0. And that pretty much ends Hull's. Hull had got back into it, hadn't they?
I think Borough are only a point out, I think.
Yeah. Blackburn won at Forest. QPR thumped Swansea.
Sounds like O'Neill is under pressure already at Forest, O'Neill and Keane.
I'm not surprised.
How they're playing.
Chopping and changing, aren't they, apparently?
They're not playing particularly good football and they're
chopping
not getting results.
Chopping and changing the team as well, aren't they?
He's already talking about how much money he needs to spend in the summer. It wouldn't surprise if that ends up him walking out on that job.
Reading picked up a massive win at home to Brentford. Millwall picked up that late equaliser at Sheffield United, which could have big ramifications at both ends. Rotherham came from 2-0 down at half-time to draw at Stoke. That could be a big point for them as well.
Good.
West Brom maybe hitting a bit of form now. They pumped Preston, who seems to have their flip-flops on now, beating them 4-1. And obviously Leeds, as we already mentioned, won 1-0 against Sheffield Wednesday. And earlier on today, Norwich got a scabby 1-1 draw at Wigan. Benjamin Bloom is there. Review is up on his YouTube channel.
He was singing the praises of Reece James very highly.
Yeah, I watched some of that game.
You see some of the players Chelsea have got on loan in this league. Reece James, ridiculous. Mason Mount, even Trevor Chalobah. These are all top players, aren't they?
And Ben got slaughtered, didn't he, by Norwich fans for putting in Reece James in his team of the year instead of obviously Max Aarons, who was in, I think it was in the EFL, won the EFL Young Player of the Year, didn't he, apparently?
Yeah.
It'd be nice. He got absolutely slaughtered, but he's a player and a half, that James, my God.
Well, that ball he put in for the disallowed goal, which wasn't offside, that was quite undefendable, that, wasn't it?
That was offside by an arm, wouldn't he, for God's sake? Yeah, because you can score with your arm, can't you? Oh, not last time I looked. Christ. Yeah. But that's the way it goes, mate.
That leaves Norwich on 86 points. I think they need a maximum of 6 points from their remaining... from four games, isn't it?
I did actually make a note of who the others. So Leeds have got Wigan at home, Brentford away, Villa at home. Wow.
Big game.
Before they play us. And Sheffield United have got Forest home, Hull away, obviously us at home. And Stoke away with some stinkers in there. Ipswich at home.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, there's some smelly ones there. But, God, Villa, I didn't realise Leeds were playing Villa the week before. Oh, that's a biggie, isn't it? My God.
Yeah, hell of a game.
They play us.
I spoke to one of my mates who's.
And Ben Bloom will be at all of them.
He couldn't get tickets for that Leeds Villa game.
Sorry?
My mate couldn't get tickets for that Leeds Villa game. He goes quite a lot. They're set only allowing one member per ticket. They're not allowing members to buy a spare because they're all being sold on.
That's on the weekend, isn't it? Because next week we've got two games. So are we playing Good Friday and
Easter Monday?
Preston. Go on, Mikey. Do the extrapolation.
I'm just starting to worry about the time, the line of duty starts soon, doesn't it? But
let's skip. We two little ducks. If we just do
the rest of the show in line of duty style acronyms of GDs and Ps and GWs for it will fly through it.
Just for me though, who do you two expect to make the final playoff place? Let's assume that Villa, West Brom, and then one off Sheffield United and Leeds are in them. Who do you think will get the final spot? So there's Bristol City, Middlesbrough and Derby.
I think Derby now. I honestly think Derby. And I think that, as Joe said, that Mason Mount, who they missed terribly, he's come back, hell of a player, he's come back into the side. I think Derby might well make that, don't you?
Yeah, I'd say if Mason Mount can stay fit, they're not going to lose many games. They just look electric going forward. But Bristol City looking a decent side at the moment. Middlesbrough, I'd rule out.
Shithouse at those, Ben would say, couldn't they? They could. But I'd fancy Derby.
Lose 1-0 in the final. Yeah. And then on a similar note, who's going to finish 22nd and join us in League One out of Rotherham, Wigan and Millwall?
I still think it's going to be Rotherham. They got a good away point yesterday, but they just are poor away from home. But you see the way they played in that second half, it was like the bomber squadron flying forwards. It was like Lincoln away when we lost in the cup, just long ball into the box, set pieces, headers.
I think Reading will win enough games at home, and Maite scoring goals again, isn't he? I think they'll have enough. Millwall was a great point yesterday, wasn't it? They'll probably nick a win at home. I'd have thought Rotherham.
Yeah, I'd probably go along with that, to be honest.
Leeds and stuff. Yeah, I don't know.
But they've maybe given themselves a bit too much to do, because they are eventually going to lose a couple of home games, aren't they? Now everyone's saying, oh well, they have got the good home form. So let's get away from the Championship. Let's go to Two Little Ducks. And do you two want to take a guess at what one I've gone for?
Who did we play yesterday?
Ipswich Leeds, an Ipswich Leeds game maybe?
No, I've actually gone for Liverpool 5, Ipswich 0 from May 2002, which was, of course, the last time we tasted relegation.
May 2002, okay.
Yeah, so I think Gerard Houllier was Liverpool manager, George Berry, of course, Ipswich manager.
Yeah.
There was 44,000 in attendance at Anfield.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
Well,
I'll start with Town. So I would say I'm going to start with a goalkeeper, and this might even be a golden goose. Hang on. Wait a minute. Let me get this right. Wait a minute. Who the hell was in goal? No, I'll say Titus Bramble.
Yeah, correct.
Not that he was in goal.
Matty Holland.
Yeah.
Never missed a game, did he?
No. No.
Jamie Clapham.
Jamie Clapham played. Yeah.
Jermaine Wright.
Jermaine Wright didn't play, so I'd play a golden goose there.
Yeah, I probably will on that one.
Yeah. I'll give you a clue that we had two strikers with the same surname.
Yeah, so Darren and Marcus.
Ben. Correct, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll go with John McGreal.
Correct, yeah. He was one of two Scousers to go off before half time.
Okay. 2001-2002,
Sixto Perrella. You might want to play your golden goose on that one. He was an unused sub. Or does that mean you don't have to?
Oh, I don't have to. No,
yeah, he's not an unused sub. Yeah, as was an Italian goalkeeper.
Okay. I'll go Andy Marshall then.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that's the one I were quite certain of there. So where are we? Did we say Herman Arvidsson?
Correct.
I don't know if Venus played in this game. But
He did.
Yeah, Venus, yeah.
We must have had all the Ipswich side, haven't we?
You're missing two, both quite legendary, but very different players.
Jim McGilton?
No. So there's one red-hot penalty taker and one who took a tasty free kick.
Oh, Tommy Miller?
Yeah.
Martin Reusser?
Correct. Yeah, so we've done Ipswich.
Liverpool, John Arne Riise nearly broke the back of the net, didn't he? Remember that?
Twice,
more than once.
Yeah.
Emil Heskey.
Correct, yeah.
Nicholas Anelka.
He came off the bench. Yeah, so you don't lose a life.
Sander Westerveld.
No. You're out, though. You're out. Do you want to take a punt at the goalkeeper?
Liverpool keeper.
Yeah. Played in the Champions League final.
Dudek. Aioni also would have played with Michael Owen. Did he play?
Yeah, he played with Heskey.
Who's the winger? Smeetzer.
Smeetzer came on for a Scouser who got injured.
Scouser.
Two big Scousers.
Stevie Gerrard. Stevie G.
Yeah, he injured his groin and didn't make the 2002 World Cup.
Liverpool.
Carragher.
Carragher's right.
Oh, yeah, Carragher, of course, yeah. No, they
had a decent European centre-back pairing.
Sammy Hoopier.
Hoopier. Honcho, was he there?
Yep. Yeah, he was the other one. They had a right-back with mad hair and beard.
Abel Xavier.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're two off. Two midfielders, one of them
Danny Murphy.
Scouser.
Danny Murphy.
Bang on. And the other one, a German. Scored a famous goal at Wembley.
Christian Ziga.
Dietmar Hamann.
Dietmar Hamann, yeah. Yeah, did pretty well there.
Pretty good, wasn't it? Pretty good.
So, yeah. We've got to the end of the flagship show after the relegation. It's a big one.
I do think we do just need to make a sort of little bit of a point of how sort of incredible the fans were at the end of the game yesterday. Yeah. Like, I was hoping it would be some sort of reaction like that, but I could not believe how good the atmosphere was when that final whistle went. And I think you could see the players and the manager in front of the fans sort of totally taken aback by it, because it was, I know Lambert has said this a number of times, this it's not normal and things, but it really isn't. That is, like, you saw Michael Brown talk about it on the show last night, and
yeah.
Sort of a couple of tweets about the fan base, and I'd like to say all credit to Blue Action who have really got this going. But just the whole ground, and it wasn't just a North Stand, but that was really special, I think, yesterday. And hopefully that will give the players and the management that real kick up the backside to know what it means and to know that we're supporting them. And we go down, and I know a little bit flippant, but I'm positive about next season. I think most of the fan base are. And yeah, ask me again in the middle of October and I might not be. But as things stand at the moment, I think we're going down with a club totally connected, and I think positivity breeds positivity. And if you can, if we can try and carry on with the fan base as it is at the moment, and the management team knowing what it means, and the players there knowing what it means, that we're in a good position again. We're not going down like a relegated club where everything needs to be started again.
Yeah, and I agree with that, Joe. And I just hope that it doesn't get toxic for these last couple of games, really. You know, I've seen, you know, you see stuff on the forum and stuff, and you know, we can't believe it that we've let Evans get away, you know, off so lightly without, I haven't mentioned any, you know, demonstrations or anything like that. But I just hope, you know, it stays with this quite a decent feeling until, you know, until the season's out now, you know.
Yeah, I think you both spot on this. Really, really nicely put by both of you. Where can we find you at Twitter, Joe?
At Joe Fares.
And you, Dave?
At DaveDiamond3.
Okay, so let's wrap it up there, guys. Cheerio, everyone. Be careful what you wish for.
Cheers, Mikey.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.